Charlotte. Buckingham House, the nursery. 15th of September, 1762.
Your Majesty, Brimsley said. He needs you.
Charlotte nodded and hurried out of the nursery. She should have been with George already, but little George had been fussy and had required more of her time than usual. Today was the day. George's speech to Parliament. He had been working so hard, draft after draft of his speech. Charlotte had read them all and offered her thoughts and opinions. But she was still new to this country. There were cultural subtleties that she didn't fully understand. How is he? She asked Brimsley.
Nervous.
Reynolds looks concerned. Charlotte bit her lip. Reynolds was such a stoic. If he looked concerned, then George was definitely in need of help. Walk with me, she said to Brimsley.
I always walk with you.
That elicited a little smile. So you do.
If I may speak freely, Your Majesty.
You often do that as well. He acknowledged this with a nod, then said,
I think perhaps he simply needs some good cheer.
Encouragement, you mean?
Yes, Your Majesty. He has been very well lately. Would you not agree? This is probably just nerves. Anyone would be nervous in such a situation.
This is true, Charlotte said. Even I. Brimsley bit back a smile. You are not so stoic as Reynolds, are you? She murmured.
I beg your pardon?
She waved this away. They had arrived in the formal sitting room. George was pacing near the window, mouthing words and making hand gestures. Reynolds was watching him with a worried expression.
Here I am,
she announced, her voice cheerful and bright.
I have been waiting, George said.
He looked magnificent in his formal military uniform, but his hands were shaking.
I was with the baby, Charlotte said. I am not late. There is plenty of time.
George nodded, but it was a shaky, jerky motion.
You look very handsome, Charlotte said, brushing an imaginary piece of lint from his coat.
Do you have your speech?
In hand, he confirmed, though I am rethinking the middle section on the colonies.
Parliament will appreciate all of your thoughts, she assured him. You have worked so hard. You are ready. She reached up to kiss him. He rested his forehead against hers, and the connection seemed to help him settle. She took an extra moment to take his hands in hers. She held them long enough for the shaking to subside. He let out a long breath.
Thank you.
Off you go, Charlotte said. It was now or never, and they both knew that never wasn't an option.
George departed, Reynolds right behind him. Charlotte counted to 10, then turned to Brimsley.
He is going to be brilliant, she said.
Of course, Your Majesty. He is the king.
Buckingham House, the Queen's sitting room. 1 hour later.
Your Majesty.
Charlotte looked up to see Reynolds standing in the doorway. This was a surprise. She would not have thought he'd be back so soon. And the look on his face, it was not good. Dread began to pool in her stomach. What was it? Did his speech not go well? Reynolds glanced at Brimsley, then looked at her with a pained expression.
His Majesty did not deliver a speech. He never got out of the carriage.
Charlotte stood. What do you mean he never got out?
His Majesty could not get out of the carriage.
Well, what happened? Charlotte demanded. What did you do?
He was quite fine when he left here.
He was not fine,
Reynolds exploded. Charlotte froze, and beside her, Brimsley audibly gasped at Reynolds's outburst.
Your Majesty, Reynolds said. Forgive me, please. It is only... He was not fine. He was not. That was merely hope.
Hope, Charlotte repeated. Reynolds nodded. His eyes were sad and so very tired.
I have tried to say, he began.
I know, Charlotte said. It was just that she had not wanted to know. But now she had no choice. What happened? She asked Reynolds. Tell me everything.
It started well, Reynolds said. I rode on the footboard so I could see through the back window. He was studying his speech, practicing mouthing the words, but as we grew closer,
Charlotte took a shaky breath.
His hands started to tremble.
Charlotte's heart sank. She knew what this meant.
And he started to...
Reynolds looked up at her with the most tortured expression.
I don't know how to describe it, Your Majesty, except that he began to shrink.
To shrink?
Brimsley asked, when it became apparent that Charlotte could not.
It was as if he were closing in on himself,
Reynolds demonstrated, his shoulders hunching, his belly going concave.
And then before I knew it, he was on the floor.
Charlotte's hand flew to her mouth.
The floor? Of the carriage?
Reynolds nodded.
He was on the floor, but no one knew but me. I was the only one riding on the footboard. I didn't know what to do when we stopped in front of Parliament. I got down as fast as I could. I wouldn't let anyone else near the door.
Thank you, Charlotte whispered.
I tried to open it, but he'd locked it from the inside.
Charlotte closed her eyes.
Oh, no.
Were there many people there?
Brimsley asked.
Yes,
Reynolds said, with just the barest tinge of what could only be termed hysteria.
Yes. There were many people there. All of Parliament was waiting for him. I did the only thing I could think to do. I climbed up and looked in the carriage.
Charlotte and Brimsley both looked at him, as if to say, and?
He was still on the floor, but it was worse than before. He'd curled into a tight little ball, as if he were trying to make himself as small as possible, as if he were trying to disappear.
Charlotte choked back a sob.
I told everyone the door was jammed, Reynolds said.
He looked at Charlotte with regret.
I don't think anyone believed me.
There was nothing else you could have done,
Brimsley said. He started to reach out a hand, as if to console, but he pulled it back. Reynolds swallowed spasmodically. For a moment, Charlotte thought he might cry.
I will go see him, she said.
Your Majesty,
Reynolds said.
I don't know.
I am his wife. I will go see him.
Before she reached the door, Brimsley was there, holding out a small cordial glass.
Apple schnapps, he said.
She took a sip, then another. It tasted like home. No, it tasted like Mecklenburg Strelitz. London was her home now.
I am ready, she said.
Brimsley took the glass back and nodded.
I will take you there.
Buckingham House, the King's bedchamber. A few minutes later. The room was dark when Charlotte entered, the curtains drawn tightly against the late afternoon sun.
George? She called out. George? It is me.
Charlotte?
His voice was muffled. She looked around. She did not see him. Yes, darling, it is me. Reynolds told me what happened. I am here, George.
She walked to the windows and pulled back the curtains. Light flooded in, but still she did not see him. Behind his dressing screen? No. At his desk? Under his desk? No.
George? George, where are you?
And then, in the tiniest, saddest voice,
I am sorry.
It took her a moment. She lowered herself to the floor and looked under the bed. George was there, flat on his back, still in his splendid uniform. Her heart breaking, she said,
George, dearest, can you come out for me?
I want to, he said, but I cannot. It is the heavens. They cannot find me under here. I am hiding.
You are hiding, she repeated patiently. From the heavens.
They are thwarted under here.
George, all is well.
No, he told her. All is very, very wrong.
She did not know how to lie to him any longer. He was correct. All was very wrong. She took a deep breath, lay on her back, and scooted herself under the bed until she was lying right beside him, staring up at the underside of the bed.
Tell me, she said.
I could not get out of the carriage. I could not even read the words on the page. I am not a king. I am no one's king.
You will do better next time, she said reassuringly.
No, there is no better. There is no cure. This is who I am.
I love who you are, she said. He shook his head.
You don't understand. I will be here sometimes, and sometimes I will be...
He looked at her, his eyes tortured.
You can leave me. I would understand, and I would let you go.
George, she said, I will not leave you.
You should.
I will not.
You have half a husband, Charlotte, half a life. I cannot give you the future you deserve.
Not a full me, not a full marriage, only half. Half a man, half a king, half a life.
If what we have is half, then we shall make it the very best half. I love you. It is enough. She reached out and took his hand, laced their fingers together.
I am your queen, she said. And as long as I am so, I will never leave your side. You are king. You will be king. Your children will rule.
She gave his hand an extra squeeze.
Together, we are whole.
They lay there, staring up.
It is quite dust-filled under here, George finally remarked.
Charlotte stifled a tiny laugh.
It really is.
He motioned with his free hand.
That one looks like a cumulus cloud.
She motioned with her free hand.
That one looks like a deformed bunny.
You mean a Pomeranian?
No, I mean a deformed bunny. Pomeranians are regal and dignified.
He smiled. She did not see it, because she was not looking at his face, but she could hear it in the tenor of his breath. But then his voice grew serious, rueful.
I am so sorry that I did not give you a choice, that I did not tell you the truth of who I was before we wed.
You did tell me the truth. You said you were just George, and that is who you are. Half king, half farmer. But always just George. That is all you need to be.
They lay in silence for several moments, the only sound the air from their lips
slowly evening out until they breathed in unison.
I do not know how to repair what happened at Parliament, George said. I fear it will overtake my crown.
If the crown cannot go to Parliament, we shall bring Parliament to the crown. Perhaps it is time we opened the doors to Buckingham House.
What do you mean?
A ball.
Here?
Why not?
It will be very crowded.
It was crowded at the Danbury Ball, Charlotte reminded him, and you performed beautifully.
He turned to face her. That was because you were with me.
She turned to face him and smiled.
Exactly.
Agatha. St. James's Palace, Princess Augusta's sitting room. 21st of September, 1762.
It is a surprise to see you again so soon,
the princess said to Agatha.
You have news?
News?
Of Buckingham House?
No, Agatha said. I do not have news. Augusta raised her brows as if to say,
Then why are you here?
Agatha took a deep breath. I need to know, Your Royal Highness, has there been a decision? But Augusta had clearly decided to feign ignorance.
A decision about what?
About the title. Is my son to be Lord Danbury? That was the question, along with so much that was left unsaid. Would Lord and Lady Smythe Smith get to pass their titles to their children? Would there ever be a second Duke of Hastings? The fate of many rested on this one decision.
As I told you before, Princess Augusta said, that is a decision only His Majesty can make. I would think you would have news on the issue yourself. You are close to the royal couple. You were there at the birth of my grandchild.
I cannot... Agatha swallowed, trying to hold herself together. I could not speak to the king or queen on such matters.
Such a shame. I could be so helpful.
There was a moment of silence, and then the princess leaned forward, her eyes sharp.
Her Majesty is attempting to run the crown. I am sure of it. What do you know?
Agatha held her tongue. She would not betray Charlotte again, no matter how high the stakes.
The ball, then, Princess Augusta said. I have been informed that they intend to host a ball at Buckingham House. What know you of that?
I know nothing, Agatha said quite honestly. I have not received an invitation.
They have not yet gone out, Princess Augusta said. I am sure you are on the guest list, as is the rest of the ton. Both sides, I think.
Agatha just shook her head. I do not know, Your Highness. I have not seen Her Majesty in several weeks. Princess Augusta's mouth clamped into a straight, irritated line.
I suppose you heard what happened at Parliament.
Only that His Majesty was not feeling well, Agatha said carefully. A throat ailment, I heard. She had heard nothing of the sort, but she had a feeling it was what the princess would most want to hear. Agatha's knowledge of the king's condition had led her to all sorts of terrible speculation as to what had actually happened, but she would never ask the queen. It was not her business, and it was certainly not her place to discuss it with the king's mother.
What do they hope to achieve with this ball, I wonder?
Princess Augusta said. Again, Your Highness, I could not begin to speculate. Until this afternoon, I did not even know a ball was being planned. The princess eyed her suspiciously.
It was clear that she was not sure if she believed her.
Well, she said,
how unfortunate that you will not speak freely to me. We had a very fine arrangement, did we not? Were not all your needs met? Would it not be a shame for you to lose the very fine estate in which you now reside?
Agatha's breath caught. She had not thought she might lose her home. Granted, she had no money, and there was every possibility that Dominic would not inherit the Danbury title. But it had never occurred to her that the crown might swoop in and repossess Danbury House. And then... oh, no. Please, God, no. She burst into tears. Ugly, loud tears.
Augusta stared at her in patent horror.
Hush, she said awkwardly. Stop that. Do not do that. No, no.
But Agatha couldn't stop. All the stresses of the past year, all the stresses of her entire life, they had somehow coalesced into this single, mortifying moment, and she could no more stop the tears than she could stop her very breath. She cried for her years with Herman, who never once saw her as an actual person. She cried for all the work she'd done to support the great experiment, for which she'd never get an ounce of credit. She cried for the fact that all that work would be for naught, because Princess Augusta and Lord Bute and the rest of them were too damned selfish to open their hearts and minds to people who did not look as they did. She cried for her son, and she cried for herself, and she cried because she just damned well needed to cry.
Go, go,
Augusta was saying, waving the servants out of the room, and then back to Agatha.
You must stop this.
Agatha couldn't. She had years of tears inside her. Decades. Augusta pulled a flask out from under a seat cushion and poured some liquid into Agatha's tea.
Pear brandy, she said. I have it shipped in from Germany. Now drink, and cease crying this instant. Please.
Agatha drank. I am sorry, she managed to get out.
No, Augusta said firmly. I do not want to know your burdens or hear what problems plague your life, nor do I care.
Agatha stared at her with watery eyes. The princess was the strangest creature, acting maternal and then speaking with harsh finality. Agatha drank more of the brandy. It was good, and it actually helped. Augusta refilled her cup.
I want you to listen to me, Augusta said. When my dear husband died, I had to throw myself on the mercy of his father, the king, George II. I expect you did not know him. He was a cruel, evil man. My husband loathed him. I loathed him. He was vicious with Georgie. The bruises. I had bruises as well. But there were no other options.
Agatha had never thought she'd feel a kinship with this woman. But just then, just a little bit, she did.
I endured, Augusta said. And over the years, I learned I need not be content to surrender to the uselessness of female pursuits. Instead, I secured my son as king. I found a way to control my own fate.
She held out the brandy again. Agatha nodded and accepted another splash.
I do not like you, Augusta said starkly. However, you have been an admirable adversary thus far. Our battles bring me satisfaction. So this?
She waved her hand in the air, motioning toward Agatha's tear-stained face.
will not do. You are not allowed to come here and sob. You may not quit. You are a woman. Cover your bruises and endure. Do not lose control of your fate, Agatha.
Agatha nodded, taking a few breaths to compose herself. Maybe there was a way. Maybe she didn't have to betray Charlotte. Maybe she could keep Augusta happy with tiny bits of nonsense, or at the very least, maybe she could buy herself a little time.
Now, tell me, Augusta said, how goes life at Buckingham House?
Agatha lifted her chin. She could figure out something to say that would not compromise her devotion to the Queen.
I believe that news depends on what is to become of my son's title, Your Highness.
Augusta smiled. Her adversary was back. Danbury House, the sitting room. 23rd of September, 1762.
You are quiet today, Adolphus said.
Agatha smiled up at him. The Queen's brother had called upon her quite frequently since the birth of the little prince. They had formed a friendship. I do not mean to be, she said. In truth, she was still thinking about her conversation with Princess Augusta. She had spun a tale about having heard gossip that the king had laryngitis, but she did not think it was enough to persuade the princess to act on her and Dominic's behalf. After all, Agatha had not provided any real intelligence about the king and queen. It had been nothing but gossip, and false gossip at that.
Come, she said to Adolphus. Tell me of your week's adventures.
I made some headway with trade agreements, he said, with some pride. The British are an obstinate lot.
He tipped his head flirtatiously.
I do not speak of the ladies, of course.
She nodded graciously.
Of course.
He smiled, but her mind was still on Princess Augusta. She did not like that woman. She likely never would. But she respected her. How long ago had Prince Frederick died? It had been more than 10 years. During that time, Augusta had fought for her family and for herself. She was surrounded by men who were constantly telling her what to think and what to do, and through it all, she had remained fundamentally independent. Agatha didn't necessarily agree with Augusta's methods or opinions, but she could not help but admire the way she had carved out a place in this world that was ruled by men.
Agatha, Adolphus said, my business is complete. My nephew is born. I am to return home soon.
I did not think you would stay, Agatha said, but I do hope we shall see one another again on your next visit.
No, he said. That is to say, I was hoping.
She watched him curiously. He normally carried himself with such style and confidence. His stammering was highly out of character.
Agatha, he said again, would you consider returning home with me as my wife?
I...
She shouldn't have been surprised. He had quite clearly stated his desire to court her, and she herself had told Coral that she saw him and his inevitable proposal as a solution to her problems. But now that it was happening, she didn't know what to do.
I know, Adolphus said, it is quite soon. You are just barely out of mourning, and we have only just begun to court. But I believe we could be happy together.
I'm not sure what to say, she murmured.
You do not need to say anything just yet,
he told her.
I will not say words with hearts and flowers, because I know you are not a hearts and flowers woman, but I believe there is something here.
He sat next to her, touched her chin.
There is something between us, he said.
He kissed her. gently at first, but then with a growing spark of passion.
"Do not answer me now," he said. "Think on it. I shall await your response."
He stood, his posture perfect, and gave her a smart bow before departing. Agatha sat in stunned silence for about a minute before Coral came running in.
"Are you going to say yes?"
Coral demanded.
"Were you listening at the door?"
"Would you believe me if I said no?"
Agatha rolled her eyes.
"He is quite a handsome man,"
Coral said.
"Yes."
"And you would not have to worry about your future?"
"Yes."
"Or the title issue?"
"Yes."
"And it does signify that his sister is Queen Charlotte. Imagine staying at the palace when we come back to visit."
"Yes,"
Agatha said yet again. Coral plopped down next to her on the sofa, not something she ordinarily did.
"I have been practicing my German. Ich diene der Königin. That means I serve the queen. That's you. You would be a queen. Never have another moment's worry when you are royalty."
"Stop talking, Coral," Agatha begged. She needed to think.
Coral pulled a bit of a face, stood up, and headed for the door. At the last moment, she turned back around.
"You are going to say yes to his proposal?"
"Go, Coral," Agatha said,
because she had no idea what she was going to do. George. Buckingham House. The gallery.
"It's a fine likeness, don't you think?"
George held his wife's hand as he stared at his wedding portrait.
"A portrait for which I did not even sit. I'm an insertion."
"It is still us," Charlotte said. "You and me."
"Yes, but not real."
And that was what worried him. There was so much in his life that was not real. Charlotte didn't know the extent of it. He had become adept at hiding all but the worst of his mental jumbles. But the heavens never stopped. Even when he was able to talk and act normally, he felt them encroaching. Even now, even with his beloved by his side, in this palace he called home, a little piece of his mind was marching off in its own direction.
"Venus," it called. "Venus."
"George," Charlotte said. He forced himself back to the moment and looked at her again.
She was magnificent, every inch a queen.
She was wearing a wig, the first time he had seen her do so, but it was coloured to look like her natural hair. It added nearly a foot to her height, made her taller than he was even.
"Look at you," he said. "You are a rare jewel."
He reached out to touch her face, but his hand was trembling, uncontrollably. He could not remember the last time he had seen it shake so. His gaze moved from her face to his hand. He could not take his eyes off his fingers. They shook and shook, and yet somehow it was Charlotte's face that looked blurry behind them. He did not touch her. He dared not. Not with that hand. But Charlotte dared. She always dared. She took his hand in hers and held it steady.
"You and me," she said.
He managed the tiniest of nods.
"You and me."
"You ready?"
she asked.
"Yes," he said.
He prayed it was true. They walked to the ballroom, already filled with guests. Reynolds and Brimsley trailed behind them, just in case.
Just in case.
George hated that. Charlotte shouldn't have to spend her life with someone who always needed a just in case.
"Your Majesty," Reynolds asked when they reached the door.
George gave him a nod. Reynolds stepped forward and announced,
His Majesty King George III and Queen Charlotte.
Venus. Transit of Venus. George grabbed Charlotte's hand, hard.
I am here, she whispered. I am Charlotte.
He nodded jerkily, but his feet wouldn't move. The crowd had gone quiet at Reynolds's announcement, but when the royal couple did not immediately appear, a low rumble began to hum through the air.
So many voices, so many people.
Venus, Venus. And then, somehow, Lord Bute's voice.
If he cannot even face his people, he is finished.
I cannot, George said to Charlotte. You can. You and me, she reminded him, together. We are one.
He nodded again, and somehow, he would never know how, his feet began to move. He entered the ballroom, Charlotte at his side.
So much noise, so many faces.
George, came Charlotte's voice.
George?
He focused on her face, her smile.
Do not feel nerves, she said.
I am fine, he said. Do I not seem fine?
You are hurting my hand.
He looked down. Dear God, he was clutching her fingers with a death grip. Instantly he released her.
Charlotte, he said,
I did not mean to...
This was a mistake.
He had to go. He started to turn, but she took his hand again, gently.
George, look at me, she said. Only at me.
Squeeze my hand if you must. It is all right.
Softer.
There. Now, let us smile and wave. Ready? He smiled. It was forced, but it was good enough. Now we wave, she said. And they did. They smiled and they waved, and the crowd cheered.
You are just George, Charlotte said.
My George. Let us dance. Together they walked to the center of the dance floor. Keep your eyes on me, Charlotte said. Do not look at anyone else. There is no one here but us.
You and me, George said,
as the music began. You and me. The first few notes floated through the ballroom and the music swelled. George never took his eyes off Charlotte's face. He didn't need to. The steps of the dance were as ingrained in his muscles as walking or riding a horse. His body knew what to do, and his mind, all it needed was to focus on Charlotte. Just Charlotte. Their hands touched, then separated. They came together, stepped apart. They circled, they nodded. And as the music moved through him, something miraculous happened. That little piece of his brain, the part that was owned by the heavens, it went silent. It would not be forever, he knew that. But for this moment, in this room, with this music, and most importantly, this woman, he was here. All of him. When the music ended, he took his queen's hand and kissed her fingers. And then he thought,
that is not enough. That will never be enough.
Right there, in front of all the ton, in front of his mother and Lord Bute and all the rest, he kissed her. He kissed his wife, his queen, his Charlotte. Maybe he was mad, and maybe he was growing worse, but he would not let this moment slip away. Everyone would know that he loved her, that she was the queen, that if anything happened to him, it was she they should turn to.
George?
She whispered, breathless at the end of the kiss.
I will be all right, he assured her. I am all right.
Her smile grew wide.
Just George.
You're George.
but if you'll excuse me, I have some kingly responsibilities to take care of.
By all means, Your Majesty.
Off he went. He had nobles to charm, members of Parliament to reassure. There was much to do, and he knew he must take advantage of this moment when he felt so well. He spent an hour or so playing his part. He danced with several ladies, his mother, of course, and Lady Danbury, to whom he would always show favour. He chatted with Lord Bute, and he joked with Charlotte's brother, and all in all, he acted exactly as a king ought. He was proud of himself. But he wanted Charlotte again. He'd done his duty. Now it was time to dance again with his wife. He heard her before he saw her. He was just about to round a corner when he overheard her speaking with his mother. He stopped, shamelessly eavesdropping.
"It is a lovely ball," his mother said.
"It is," Charlotte replied. "We enjoy hosting."
George almost laughed. It was an outright lie. He hated hosting. But he would do it. If it meant more moments like these, he would do it.
"We shall do it more often," Charlotte said.
"Good,"
his mother replied.
"Yes."
It was growing awkward. Perhaps he should intervene. But then his mother said,
"I have only ever wanted him to be happy."
"He is happy," Charlotte said.
"You make him happy."
George bit back a smile. His mother was not an easy woman, and she had an overabundance of pride. She had devoted her life to his kingship, and now she was ceding her place to Charlotte. He peeked around the corner.
"Thank you,"
his mother said to Charlotte. She swept into a curtsy, the deepest he had ever seen her perform. She looked up at Charlotte and said,
"Your Majesty."
Then she stood, straightened into her usual stiff posture, and the moment was gone.
"I must see to Lord Bute," she said,
and she walked away, leaving Charlotte vaguely stunned. George stepped forward and wrapped his arms around her.
"Did you see that?"
Charlotte asked.
"I did."
"I am not sure."
"Don't question it," he smiled.
"Shall we dance?"
"Yes, but..."
She glanced about.
"What is it, my love?"
"Let us have one dance, just for us, where no one can see."
"Does this mean I will be able to kiss you?"
"You mustn't disturb my hair," she warned him.
"I would not dare."
"To the gardens?"
He nodded, grabbed her hand, and took off, the pair of them giggling like truant schoolchildren.
"Shh,"
Charlotte admonished.
"Someone will hear."
"Who will hear?" he whispered.
"I don't know, but we should still be..."
She stopped short.
"What?"
She elbowed him, then jerked her head towards something ahead of them. George followed her line of sight. It was another couple dancing. Reynolds and Brimsley. George put his finger to his lips and pulled Charlotte behind a hedge.
"Did you know?"
she whispered.
"I knew that Reynolds preferred men, but I didn't know about Brimsley."
Charlotte peeked out.
"They look so happy."
George yanked her back so he could see. They were dancing like a couple in love. Reynolds was leading, probably because he was taller. They were laughing and whispering, and it occurred to George that they looked rather like Charlotte and him. In love.
Happy. "Let us go," he whispered to Charlotte.
"They need this moment more than we do."
She nodded, and they tiptoed back to the palace. King and queen, tiptoeing like thieves.
"Well," Charlotte said, once they were out of earshot.
"Well."
"That was surprising,"
but nice.
She nodded slowly. It was. It is. George cleared his throat and glanced toward the ballroom.
It is probably time I make a toast.
Wait, she said. I have something to tell you. He gazed upon her with indulgence. She looked suddenly shy, and this was not an emotion he normally associated with her. You and I, George, she said. We have changed the world with our love. But the crown can be fragile, and the fates of many rest on us securing our line. While he was digesting that comment, she took his hand and placed it on the pale green silk covering her belly. Our line, he murmured, regarding her with something approaching wonder. You and me. And them, she said. Little Georgie and whoever this might turn out to be. He kissed her, and then he kissed his fingers and touched them to her belly.
This is just our news for now, though, yes?
Oh, most definitely.
I would very much like to retire for the evening, he said with regret. But I'm afraid we must go be king and queen again.
Off they went, back to the ballroom. Wine was poured, and George stood in the centre of the crowd. Charlotte's pregnancy would be a secret for several more months, but they did have their young son to celebrate. George raised his glass, waited for the noise of the crowd to subside, then said,
We thank you all for joining us to celebrate the arrival of our new prince.
Everyone cheered. A baby was always a magical thing. A royal baby, even more so.
Unsurprisingly, given that I am the third, we have chosen to name him George the Fourth.
He raised his glass again.
To your future king.
The crowd joined in.
To our future king.
To the future. Whatever it might hold.
Agatha.
Buckingham House, the gardens. Shortly after the toast. Agatha did love a good party. Much more so now that Herman was gone, and she did not have to monitor his behaviour, or her own, with which he had always managed to find some fault or infraction. But this party was wearying. It was full of secrets and of hidden struggles. She had seen the look of terror in the king's eyes when he and the queen first stepped into the ballroom. She had seen how Charlotte had held his hand and whispered words that no one else would ever hear. But Agatha had been granted unfathomable access into their secrets, and she had a good idea of what those words might be. She felt for her friend. She could not know what the future might hold, none of them could, but she suspected that Charlotte had many years ahead of her of holding the king, keeping him safe and well, protecting him from gossip and intrigue. At some point, he would falter, and she would be the crown. It was a heavy burden. The party was still very much in full swing, but Agatha decided she needed a break, so she'd wandered out into the gardens. Not too far. A lady had her reputation to think of, even respectable widows like her. But the air was fragrant and cool, and it brought a welcome sense of peace. After a few minutes, however, she discovered she had company. Adolphus. She had a feeling he'd been looking for her.
You dislike crowds as much as I do, he said,
once he reached her side.
Another way we are a match.
True. I needed a moment to breathe. It is such a crush in there.
My sister is a shining success, Adolphus said. I am happy for her.
Agatha gave him a small smile. Charlotte had shared none of her problems with him. Of that,
Agatha was certain. Adolphus knew nothing of George's illness, of the strength and steel Charlotte would need to draw upon to navigate the years ahead. He saw a glittering queen. And she was a glittering queen. But she was so much more. Adolphus stepped closer.
It would be nice to be happy for myself as well.
Agatha did not pretend that she did not understand. What would our life be like, she asked, if we married and I went back home with you? He smiled broadly, his chest puffing with pride.
It is probably treason to say this here, but my province is the greatest place in the world. It is exquisitely beautiful, with green fields and glittering lakes, the best people, the best food.
That sounds nice.
It is. I rule, of course. But as my consort, you would have certain duties as well. We are more egalitarian there.
Egalitarian sounded good.
Most of the wives at court are older than you, but you will like them. Adolphus continued, once you learn the language.
Of course, she murmured.
She'd known that would be a requirement. And it is good that you are young. It means you can have more children.
More children, she echoed.
Dear God,
she already had four. She did not want more. She had not enjoyed being pregnant, and she really had not enjoyed giving birth. Not that anyone did. But she was well aware what a perilous endeavour it was. Charlotte had nearly died giving birth to the new Prince of Wales. It had been terrifying, and all too common.
Agatha, he said, I will raise the Denbury children as my own. I will care for them as I do you. But you know that I must have an heir of my own, perhaps two or three.
Two or three, she swallowed.
Two or three more children.
She did not want two or three more children.
You can travel with me, he said happily. We can even come back here to England every few years if you are worried about missing home.
But you will not miss home for long. There will be festivals and balls and charities, and...
No,
she blurted out. She'd had no idea she was going to say it. It just came from her. Unbidden, but no less true.
Agatha,
he said, clearly surprised.
I cannot marry you,
realizing the truth of this as she said it.
I am sorry.
His face betrayed his confusion.
I have made you nervous with so much talk of change.
No, I cannot marry you, but only because... And that was when she understood.
I cannot marry anyone.
He took a step back, an uncomprehending look on his face.
You are a wonderful man, she told him.
And when you courted me, something in me was awakened, so I felt hopeful.
You would have saved me from 1,000 different problems. You would have rescued me. You would have listened to me and cared for me.
Then let me, he implored. She shook her head. It does not change what I know to be true. I cannot marry you. I cannot marry anyone. I never want to be married again. Adolphus, I have spent my life breathing someone else's air. I did not know any other way. It is time I learn to breathe all on my own.
Agatha, he said, do not do this. This is a terrible mistake you are making.
Perhaps I am making a terrible mistake, but it is mine to make. I do hope you will forgive me. She smiled gently and gave him a kiss on the cheek. Goodbye, Adolphus. She took a step, and then another, walking by herself, on her own. She was her own person. Finally.
Buckingham House, the back entrance. An hour later. It was time to go. It had been a wonderful night, but a momentous one, and Agatha was exhausted. She made her way to her carriage, but before she could step up, she heard the unmistakable voice of the Queen. Lady Danbury! Agatha had never heard her use that tone before. Not on her. Not on anyone. She was marching toward her with a purpose and stride that was frankly unsettling.
Your Majesty, she said quickly, dropping into a curtsy.
Thank you so much for... You refuse my brother? Charlotte demanded. Offer him hope of a union, of happiness, then break his heart. At my ball. In my home.
Of course, Charlotte had been aware that Adolphus had been courting her. Agatha did not recall speaking with her about it specifically, but Adolphus must have done so. And now he must have told her that Agatha had said no. Agatha's heart dropped to her knees, which very nearly buckled.
Your Majesty, I... His humour may lack wit, Charlotte went on. And yes, his condescension knows no bounds. He is, however, a person of fine character and pure heart, and someone in your position could find much worse options, could they not?
They could indeed, Agatha said hastily. Your Majesty, please, I beg of you to accept my apology. Tell me, what might I do in order to...
Adolphus will survive. Charlotte said curtly, what concerns me is what I am to do with you.
Me?
The fact that you did not bring your concerns to me, your fears regarding your inheritance, your title, the fate of your family, of all the families recently titled.
How did you know?
Agatha very nearly whispered. Charlotte raised her brows.
Does it matter?
No, of course not.
I am queen. It is my job to know these things, my duty. And I must be able to rely upon my most trusted friends to come to me with honesty and openness.
Agatha bowed her head.
I apologize, Your Majesty. I only did not wish to place my burden on top of your own. Yours, which seems so...
She did not finish the sentence, so Charlotte prompted her.
So,
one crown is heavy enough, Agatha said quietly. But to carry two...
Charlotte did not speak right away. She stared at Agatha with an intensity that made her wonder if she'd made a mistake. She should not have alluded to the king's troubles, to Charlotte's impossible responsibilities. She should have been more circumspect. But then, finally, Charlotte spoke. And when she did, it was with the authority of one who had been born for this very moment. We are one crown, she said. His weight is mine, and mine is his. One crown. We rule for the welfare of our subjects, new and old, rival and foe, titled or not. You tell me my palace walls are too high. I tell you they must be. High as the sky, if necessary. To protect you. To protect all our worthy subjects. Agatha could only stare, feeling that she was somehow witnessing the birth of something great. Something miraculous.
I suggest you shift your fear to faith. Come to us with your concerns, Charlotte said, her expression softening slightly. Directly. To do otherwise would suggest that we are incapable of addressing them.
unless that is what you believe, Lady Danbury.
Agatha could not speak. This girl, this woman, she was a wonder. She was going to change history. She already had.
You may go, Charlotte said. I shall send for you soon.
Your Majesty, Agatha somehow managed to say. She curtsied, deeply.
Charlotte turned to go, but after only a few steps, she turned and said, Do give my regards to young Lord Danbury. Dominic, his name is, yes? Hope and yes, joy bloomed in Agatha's chest. Yes, Your Majesty, Dominic. He is a handsome little one. Not as handsome as my Georgie will surely be, of course.
Agatha bit back a smile.
Of course. She waited until the Queen had departed, then took a footman's hand to help her up into her carriage. As she rode home to her marvellous mansion that she had secured for her family, she settled back against the cushions with a sigh and smile. The great experiment was no longer an experiment. It was a fact. And it was very, very great. 56 years later. Charlotte. Kew Palace, the King's Bedchamber. 30th of October, 1818. It was not a long distance from Buckingham Palace to Kew, but to Charlotte, Queen of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland, it felt as if she were travelling to an entirely different planet. She did not make this journey as often as she ought. It hurt to see George. It hurt her heart. It hurt her bones. It hurt her soul. She had spent so many years watching him slowly whisper away, and now he did not recognize her. Perhaps once in the past year she had been able to reach him, twice in the year before that. It was heartbreaking to have that fleeting connection, that brief moment when she could remember just George and be just Charlotte. The joy of it wasn't worth the pain that inevitably followed, when he returned to his madness, with his heavens and stars and equations, and more lately, his absolute nonsense. She'd used to be able to understand what he said, even if it made little sense, but now it was usually just gibberish. Her George was a ghost, just waiting to die. But today, she had important news, and she would tell it to him, whether he heard her or not. He was her love, and he would always be her love. She owed him this. Charlotte entered his room to find him writing on the walls, as he often did. An attendant sat in the corner. He'd been instructed to let George draw whatever he wanted, wherever he wanted. It made him happy. And that was what Charlotte wanted most, for him to be happy. You may go, she said to the attendant. He gave her a look that said, Are you certain? George did sometimes have difficult outbursts. She gave him a look that said, I am your queen. Get out. He got out. George, Charlotte said, once the attendant had shut the door behind him. George didn't turn around, but he did wave his hand as if shooing her away. Do not bother me in the sky. George, it is me. It is your Charlotte. Still, he ignored her, mumbling words she could not make out. I have some news, George. Wonderful news. She stepped toward him. George? George. It was as if she weren't there. He kept mumbling,
and writing on the wall, and Charlotte wondered if she was the ghost, just waiting to die. She looked at his bed. It was not the same one from his room in Buckingham Palace, but it was still a bed, and she thought, maybe, just maybe. She got down on her knees, clearing her throat loudly as she did so. He looked over and frowned. She lay on her back and scooted under, not an easy feat in her gown. "Just George," she called out. "Farmer George." She waited, holding her breath. And then there he was, peering under the bed at her. "Come," she said with a smile, "hide from the heavens with me." He pondered her request for a brief moment, gave a little nod, and joined her.
"Charlotte,"
he said, with the greatest delight.
"Why, hello."
"Hello, George." She didn't cry, because she did not cry, but her eyes felt rather odd.
"It is quiet here,"
he said. "George," she said, "we have succeeded. Our son Edward has married, and his wife is with child."
"Edward is going to be a father."
"Yes, your line will live on."
"Our line," he reminded her.
"Our line," she repeated. And then, very sweetly, he kissed her. It tasted like the past. It tasted like her very heart.
"Fancy meeting you here," he said.
She burst out laughing. But then he looked at her with an expression she rarely saw on his face anymore. Sober, serious, but still full of love.
"You did not go over the wall," he said.
She smiled. "No, George, I did not go over the wall."
This is Natalie Simpson. This unabridged production of Queen Charlotte. Before the Bridgertons came the love story that changed the ton, by Julia Quinn and Shonda Rhimes. Presented by William Morrow and Harper Audio. Was directed by Ali Muirden and recorded at Strathmore Publishing in London, England. This programme was produced by John Marshall Media. Engineered by Stuart Wise. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2023 by Julie Kotler-Pottinger and Shonda Rhimes. Production copyright 2023 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.